need for tuition increases is kind of ingrained in the fabric of the university at this point.
Students at the University of Alaska face years of significant tuition hikes. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 28th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a successful start to the fall whaling season in Barrow.
Cooped a whole lot of muktuk, and thank goodness for these Ziploc bags. We cool them off, put them in Ziploc bags, and freeze them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future.
Anchorage attorney Bill Walker today added his name to the list of contenders for the Republican nomination for governor in next year's primary election. Walker is a former mayor of Valdez, where he is now city attorney. He has also become the spokesman for those supporting an all-Alaska gas line from the North Slope to Valdez, where it would be liquefied and shipped to offshore markets. Walker says while there are many Alaska issues that concern him, his focus is on energy.
The overriding issue for me is the cost of energy in our state. And the gas line is certainly a piece of that, but I am frustrated as I watch other countries, other host governments develop their projects and announce their projects. And we do not.
He says he favors a state-owned gas line from the North Slope completely within Alaska, built and operated by the private sector. He said with strong U.S. gas supplies now, the state should be looking to world markets as well as to the lower 48 for customers. He is supported by former Governor Wally Hickle, who shares his views on an in-state gas project. Walker is well known for his advocacy of an all-Alaska gas line. However, he says he's getting ready to show the public that he is interested in other issues and that he's concerned about Alaska's future generations that need a replacement for the wealth that has come from oil production and from the Trans-Alaska pipeline system.
The TAPS has been good to us. Alaska has done well by TAPS, and we owe it to the next generation that our resources get to Alaskans.
So far, Walker's only opponent in the Republican primary is Representative John Harris, former Speaker of the State House of Representatives. Harris was also mayor of Valdez. Governor Sean Parnell has indicated that he plans to run, but has not yet taken the formal steps to be on the ballot. Students at University of Alaska campuses are facing a steady rise in tuition through the year 2012. Despite a plea from student leaders and some regents to institute more moderate increases, the Board of Regents on Friday voted 6-3 to raise tuition an average of 7% starting in the fall of 2011. That's on top of increases already in place this year and next. Ann Sutton reports.
The coalition of student leaders brought a novel approach to the Juneau meeting. They said they were supporting a tuition hike, just not such a high one. UA President Mark Hamilton was recommending a 5% increase for lower division classes and a 10% increase for upper division classes in the 2012 academic year. Students asked the board to consider instead a 3% and a 7% hike, although Coalition Speaker Peter Finn of Anchorage said they'd prefer to oppose it altogether.
But the reality is that the way they've structured the system now, the need for tuition increases is kind of ingrained in the fabric of the university at this point. It isn't like it's always going to be that way, but in the meantime, if we're going to have tuition increases, we want to have increases that are not going to be backbreaking.
In testimony before the board on Friday, Fairbanks student Nicole Carvajal said a 71% rise in tuition over the last 10 years, coupled with sparse opportunities for financial aid, has forced some students to leave school or take fewer classes. She added that by raising tuition, the university is signaling to the state legislature that when times are tight, it's willing to put the squeeze on students.
This is the wrong message to send. We want to show the legislature just how valuable the university itself is and how important every single student is. If one student isn't living up to their full potential just because of the cost of school, that's too many.
A majority of regents, however, endorsed Hamilton's approach. Board Chair Cynthia Henry said she was sympathetic to students' concerns, but felt the increase was necessary.
In the discussion, we talked about, you know, sort of what you pay for. and the improvements to program and facilities in recent years really does have greater value. So there is a greater value coming with that higher tuition. And so there was concern that if we did not approve what the president was recommending, that it could mean some cuts.
Henry says cuts would likely have to come from faculty and programs, since the administration has already been pared down. Taking into account the smaller increases already in place for next year, the hike will mean a student with 15 credits will be paying about $5,100 a semester in 2012, compared to $4,500 a semester currently. Henry says that's still a good deal. UA tuition is close to average among colleges and universities in other Western states and generally has undergone a slower percentage rise over the last 10 years. Meanwhile, cash-strapped schools like Washington State University and the University of California are facing much higher increases.
That was also a part of our discussion. It is a good bargain for the students.
But while Alaska may be on par with other states on tuition, it's a different story when it comes to state financial aid, which is decided by the state legislature. According to UA Public Affairs Director Kate Ripley, state grant aid averages $416 per student in other Western schools and only $28 per student in Alaska. Alaska lawmakers often cite the permanent fund dividend check as a form of financial aid. Student leaders say they'll step up their lobbying efforts at the Capitol next session for more needs-based assistance. Henry anticipates Regents will support increased aid with a resolution. Mark Hamilton told the board he spoke to Governor Sean Parnell about the need to broaden incentives beyond just the top 10% of students.
We have people who, I believe, quit early because they just don't see the possibility of access financially.
Students also are asking Regents to consider a $1 hourly increase in student wages. Wages currently range from $7.50 to $9.50 an hour, and Fairbanks student Todd Vorasek told the board they've been stagnant for years.
The cost of living escalates 1.3% annually, while students have seen a 0% increase in compensation over the last 7 years. By raising the wage one full dollar, the Regents will be giving students a 1.5% annual increase over the past 7 years, where staff and faculty receive approximately 3 to 4% annual raises.
Henry anticipates Regents will address a student wage increase at a future Regents meeting. In Juneau, I'm Ann Sutton.
The former chief financial officer of a Nana Development Corporation subsidiary allegedly embezzled nearly $190,000 for personal purchases and phony expense reimbursements. NDC is the business arm of Nana Regional Corporation based in Kotzebue. According to papers filed in U.S. District Court in Seattle, Clyde Thomas Beard is charged with one count of mail fraud. Beard worked for the Seattle office of Nana Services, which deals in food, facility, and services management, often on military bases. Federal prosecutors say the incidents occurred between April 2005 and February 2008 when Beard left the company. Besides false travel expenses, Beard is accused of using a corporate credit card for purchasing personal items, a television set, and a diamond ring. A hearing on the case takes place tomorrow at U.S. District Court in Seattle. North Slope whaling crews are having good success this fall. Barrow whalers have brought in 6 whales so far. 4 were caught on Saturday and 2 more on Sunday. North Slope Borough Mayor Edward Itta was out today with his crew because the weather was calm. But George Oliman, the assistant to Mayor Itta, says the whales have been landed are good-sized.
Yeah, they look pretty good. I know they're in a 30-foot, 30-plus or whatever foot. Or more than at least 26.
Oliman says you can figure about 1 ton per foot of whale, so many residents in Barrow are working long hours to get the meat taken care of for winter use. Pauline Oliman is the administrative manager for the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission. The AEWC sets the quota numbers for each of the 10 member villages. Barrow whaling crews have 22 strikes in the spring and 16 for the fall season. Even if a crew strikes a whale but does not land it, that strike counts and is deducted from their available quota. Pauline says the weather has been nice, so the whaling crews are working hard, and family members cutting up whale meat are also taking advantage of the good weather.
Everybody is busy. Once they catch a whale, they go out
assist all the whalers. We have some snow. Yes, we have been very busy.
She says even though she works days at AEWC, she's busy every evening now putting up the catch for winter.
I cut it up and store it. What I did was I cut up our share and cooked it and, you know, put it away, preparing it, you know, to make other meals. Cooked a whole lot of muktuk, and thank goodness for these Ziploc bags. We cool them off, put them in Ziploc bags, and freeze them and, you know, keep them.
Subsistence whaling helps North Slope Inupiaq stay connected to their culture and tradition, and it also helps them stretch their grocery dollars in an area where a visit to the store can induce sticker shock.
Store-bought food is very expensive. I mean, I sometimes try and just purchase my minimum, you know, staples, what I need, you know, in order to save money for other things. So it is expensive.
Barrow crews are back out today, as are whalers in Koktovik. Crews there have caught two whales so far. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, with the rise of Russian nationalism means for Alaska.
They have a song which is called Don't Fool Around America, Give Back Us Our Native Land.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Elks National Foundation, in conjunction with the Alaska State Elks Association and local lodges, is offering the Most Valuable Student MVS Scholarship for high school seniors. These scholarships are awarded to graduating high school seniors through a local, state, and national competition and are based on scholarship, leadership, and financial need. Information and applications at elks.org/ENF. Application deadline is November 2nd. This message sponsored by the Alaska Elks Association.
A federal agency must decide within 3 weeks whether a seal dependent on Arctic sea ice should have additional protections. A federal judge Friday approved a settlement between the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the Center for Biological Diversity, which had sued to force a decision. The settlement requires the agency to decide by October 15th whether spotted seals merit listing under the Endangered Species Act due to threats from global warming and oil development. The agreement calls for a decision on two other ice-dependent seals, ringed and bearded seals, by November 1, 2010. Ringed, bearded, and spotted seals off the coast of Alaska use sea ice in different ways for giving birth, rearing pups, and resting. An old Southeast Alaska mine is one step closer to becoming a federal Superfund site. The Environmental Protection Agency has nominated Prince of Wales Island's Saltchuk Mine to a list of the country's most contaminated locations. That's expected to lead to a major environmental cleanup effort. The gold, silver, and copper mine last operated in the 1940s. Heavy metals from tailings are impacting Lake Ellen Creek and Kasan Bay, about 40 miles northwest of Ketchikan. EPA's Ken Marcy says salmon and shellfish harvested by commercial and subsistence fishermen have been contaminated.
There's 100,000 cubic yards of crushed mine ore, it's called tailings, in the bay, and these contain significantly elevated levels of mercury and arsenic. And there's also mercury in clam tissue.
Marcy expects the site will make the Superfund list. He says the decision should be made by March. Evaluation could begin next summer. Marcy says it's too early to predict what action will be taken, but the cleanup could involve removing the tailings from the bay. The mine site at the head of Kasan Bay is part of the Tongass National Forest. The agency recently received $1.4 million in federal stimulus funds for its cleanup effort.
The Forest Service has done a significant amount of work evaluating the site. So it's going to be a cooperative effort between EPA, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, and the Forest Service.
The Saltchuk site is near the town of Thorn Bay and the village of Kasan. It's also in a region that's gained renewed interest from mining companies. Several Canadian corporations are exploring copper, gold, silver, and uranium deposits north and south of Saltchuk on the east side of Prince of Wales Island. The Aleutian Islands community of King Cove in southwest Alaska is celebrating 60 years since incorporation in 1949. State and federal officials were in attendance at festivities held last week. KSDP's Kels Hetherington was there and has the story.
Current King Cove City Mayor Ernie Weiss explained just what a distinction 60 years is.
In 1949, we were just the 20th city in the territory of Alaska to have incorporated.
The city of King Cove's charter was signed by Anthony J. Diamond, a one-time delegate to Congress. The document was signed on December the 7th after a vote took place the day after Thanksgiving Day, 1949. Aleutians Eastboro Mayor Stanley Mack, whose father was one of the original trustees of the city of King Cove, emphasized the importance of incorporation.
Elders in town said it's time that we grab a hold of our community and get independent. And one of the reasons was for the independent school district.
Commissioner of Natural Resources Tom Irwin is among the city's greatest champions.
Now, when I go to a community that was 10 years ahead of the state becoming a state, and then I see a community that did hydroelectric before it was fashionable, but it was certainly smart, and then I see a community that takes waste heat out of boilers or out of the generators and puts it into facilities, and then I see an area that is now talking about phase two hydro. I guess I'd more have a question for you all. What are you gonna do next so we can maybe convey the word to the rest of the world what we ought to be doing?
Federal co-chair of the Denali Commission, George Canellas, told the crowd in King Cove,
"You're the future. You're the future, you're doing really, really great. You've got great leadership, great city leadership, tribal leadership, strong private industry partnerships."
The Denali Commission has invested over $8 million in King Cove projects over the last 8 years. Kels Hetherington in King Cove.
The federal government is looking for the public to assist in monitoring the use of the economic stimulus money that is being distributed to help improve the national and local economic conditions. The Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board today is beginning a national reporting system looking for fraudulent use of the money. Cheryl Avidson with the board says the recovery.org website will soon have a simple method for finding out what local projects are going on, who received money, and what it's supposed to be used for. She says the board must watch out for the possibility of misuse, and that begins with people being able to help them.
People who are right there on the scene, on the ground, have a great opportunity to see if they think something just doesn't make sense. If they think maybe this project looks a little fishy, for example, we would like to believe that all of this money would go out and there would be no problem. But that's not realistic. And if you're going to do an effective job of trying to stop fraud and waste and abuse, you need as many eyes and ears as possible watching out for these projects. And we think that by giving people the capacity and the ability to go to their local neighborhoods and get drilled down into this information, that that will substantially increase our ability to detect malfeasance and fraud and abuse that's going on out around the country.
Grant recipients are required to report on their progress beginning October 1st, but Avidson says the federal government is prepared to assist people who are unfamiliar with filing reports.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
When UnAlaska hosted the annual Alaska Historical Society Museums Alaska Joint Annual Conference, community members learned about topics ranging from Aleut art in Russian museums to Russian-American history. KUCB's Ann Hillman spoke with one presenter about Russia's view of Alaska now, 142 years after the sale.
The Russians want Alaska back. Sort of. Andre Zemensky, an assistant professor of history at the University of Memphis, recently spoke at the Alaska Historical Society annual conference in Unalaska. He says Russian nationalism is pushing its way into the mainstream culture, and people are lamenting the fall of the Russian Empire.
The funniest thing is that contemporaries in the 19th century were not so much upset about the sale of Alaska as modern-day Russian nationalists.
Even one of former President Vladimir Putin's favorite bands sings about it.
They have a song which is called Don't Fool Around, America, Give Back Us Our Native Land. That's all. Of course, it's nobody seriously talks about bringing back Alaska to Russia, but it's a rhetoric, it's a talk, it's a bunch of gossip, it's a bunch of stereotypes, which help some Russians to massage their ego.
Zemensky says Russian nationalism is on the rise. Some see Alexander II, who sold Alaska to the United States, as a traitor. They say that traces of Russian culture that remain in Alaska are evidence that the state is still spiritually part of Russia. Others lie in their books and say Alaska was rented, not sold. Zemensky says the misinformation is not refuted in textbooks, nor do textbooks even talk about Russian-American history.
The textbooks don't mention Alaska at all. There are only maybe a couple of lines. I saw major textbooks. They mentioned two sentences that Alaska was sold by Alexander II. That was bad decision, bad strategic decision. That's it.
Part of this rise in nationalism comes from disillusionment with capitalism and the United States. Zemensky says many people thought the rise of capitalism in the 1990s would solve the country's problems. Then, when it didn't...
Well, a lot of people, millions of people feel offended, betrayed, the failure of capitalism in Russia in the 1990s, this chaos and mess that was produced by Yeltsin government is ascribed to the conspiracy of some hidden forces like United States, World Zionism, and some Russians sincerely believed in this thing, as funny as it might sound to us.
He says some of the newly stressed national pride is even leading to hate crimes against Muslims and people of color in the cities. Other people openly put up signs that request roommates only of Slavic origin.
The aim is that we should restore our glory as much as possible. Even though we lost a lot of lands, we Russians, we have to consolidate ourselves as Russians right now. We don't need this. Yes, we did lose these lands, but now we don't need them. So let's, as Russians right now, rise up.
So the Russians may not really want Alaska back, but they do want her glory. In Unalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
Elementary school students in Homer have been learning all about cowboy culture and the Western Code from a real Montana cowboy who is also a poet and singer-songwriter. KBBI's Marsha Lynn has more.
TJ Casey was born and raised on a cattle ranch in Montana. He now runs his own ranch near Billings. Both his parents were musicians, which Casey says was part of the reason he's followed that path.
There's times when I was growing up that I would myself put together a little dance party where I'd invite all the school kids over and we'd have a little play records and dance deal for all the kids and stuff. And then mom and dad once a year would put on a harvest ball and all the ranchers in the area would come in and we'd have a band in there. And one of my favorite pictures that I look at now is me sitting on the lawn with my guitar at the school lawn in Lima, Montana, where I graduated. And the kids in there were all around me. I was singing a song on the lawn.
Casey is still entertaining kids. He's just finishing a two-week artist-in-schools residency at McNeil Canyon Elementary School. He says there's never a problem with discipline in his classroom.
I'm 6'3" and weigh 220 pounds, and most kids look at me like, what's that guy doing here, man? So it's pretty good, but I love kids, and kids respond to what I do, and I enjoy everything that I do with them kids. It's been great.
He says key elements of teaching kids how to write poetry are rhyme and meter.
Just like cat, scat, hat, fat, rat, you got to figure out rhyming words, but the meter part of it is the one, just like with limericks. And once was a man from Peru, who dreamt he was eating a shoe. He awoke one night in a terrible fright and found it was perfectly true. So it hasn't been a real easy thing for them to catch, but they're catching it. Actually, the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I'm really pleased with. They're just doing really well. And the others are, too. In fact, the first grade, we actually wrote a song, a cowboy song.
Whoopie-tie, oh cowboy, riding the range. Whoopie-tie, oh cowboy, I hope that you don't change.
Casey, who writes most of his own songs, works solo and with other musicians.
Cowboy Don't Change Your Ways was on the World Roots charts for 4 consecutive months at number 1.
Well, hey there, old can man, ain't nothing, life stays the same. You've never cashed no welfare check, and you sure never cheated life's game.
Old Can Man was actually a poem when it was started. It was written about the old can man. His name was Andy. Lived there in Dillon, Montana. He retired at 67 years old. And at 97 years old, he passed away. But from 67 to 97, he gathered cans and bottles out of garbage cans and off the side of the road and places. He was a millionaire when he passed away.
I'm Marsha Lynn.
You won't be digging for bottles and cans when you get heaven's own door.
Former Governor Sarah Palin has finished her memoir just 4 months after the book deal was announced. Her publisher says the release date has been moved up from the spring to November 17th. Harper publisher Jonathan Burnham says Palin invested herself deeply and passionately in the project. He says the book contains fascinating detail. The 400-page book is the first for Palin and will be called Going Rogue, An American Life. A huge first printing of 1.5 million copies has been commissioned by Harper, an imprint of HarperCollins. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ann Sutton and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Kels Hetherington in King Cove, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, and Marsha Lynn in Homer. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business with data transfer speeds up to Gig E. ACS, connecting Alaska companies to each other and the rest of the world. Tuesday, October 6th is the REAACRSA election. Polling places are open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Bring your voter registration card, your driver's license, or your tribal ID. If your name is not on the register, you may vote a question ballot. If you're unable to go to the polls, you may have a personal representative pick up a special needs ballot for you from the polling place. The election board can provide language or other assistance needed, or you may bring a person of your choice to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.